All right. Reggie, you ready to do a little podcasting?
So am I.
What do you say we do it? All right. Get ready. Get that trigger finger ready. I'll give you the three S's. I'll give you that countdown, and we'll do episode 497. What do you think? All right. Let's do it. Star, smile strong. 3, 2, 1. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNRadio.com or wherever you go to find your favorite podcast. We are there. And don't forget, while it's important to listen, also, once you get out there and tell your friends, tell your family, tell anybody who listens to a podcast that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and it should be theirs too. Your loyalty and devotion are much appreciated. It's, you know, it's great that you listen, but, you know, I'd love to get out there and get your bullhorn out there and tell everybody. Of course, if you enjoy the podcast, whether you've been listening for 2 weeks or almost 10 years since we've been doing this since May of 2015, and almost 500 podcasts, if you've been listening for that long, hey, once again, I love that support and love that loyalty. But it's also important to maybe go back and listen to some older podcasts. If you need something to fill some time while you're doing a walk or doing a run or just chilling out, I'd love to be a part of that experience. So go to WGNRadio.com, go to the podcast section, and then go to the prompt for this exact podcast. And there you will find podcast after podcast. Scroll down, load more, scroll down, load more. Not all 10 years are up there, but a good number to certainly let you know where we've been, so you know where we're going. And right now, we're going to episode 497. So what I want to talk about today is something that maybe you didn't get a chance to see, but I'm sure that you will get a chance to see it if you're looking for it. Over the next month or so with the holidays, a lot of special programming. People are on vacation. They have time. It's a good time to sit down and relax and chill out and watch some things. And so it's a perfect time to watch this. If not, I'm sure this thing will be rerun many times between now and July 4th because of America's upcoming 250th birthday. And what I'm talking about is the latest documentary series by probably the most famous and respected and perhaps the best documentarian that we've had in terms of documenting the American experience over the last 30 or 40 years. And that would be Mr. Ken Burns. Of course, he made his first foray into the world on PBS with these entertaining, informative, in-depth, fact-filled, anecdote-filled, just captivating documentaries about a major high points in the development of America, not only about historical events like the Civil War or the Vietnam War, but important aspects of the American experience, including things like baseball or jazz music or country music, or our national parks, or, you name it. I mean, he has really put together quite an array of interesting documentaries that really talk about so much, whether it's the personalities like, Benjamin Franklin or, Ernest Hemingway or Jackie Robinson or the Roosevelts or, the Dust Bowl, or as I said before, Prohibition, baseball, jazz music, so many things. And of course, it makes sense that as we approach the 250th anniversary of the United States birth, if you will, with the Declaration of Independence, what a better way to celebrate that by doing his latest and a quite comprehensive documentary called The American Revolution. It debuted on PBS a few weeks ago in mid-November, 6 parts, 12 hours, and once again, chock full of interesting information, some that you may have learned about, but much that you probably haven't. The great thing about a Ken Burns documentary of overall is not just the research visually as well as informationally that goes into these, but I think most importantly, he provides the key element to understanding history at its core, and that is the context. You know, when we were in grammar school and high school, and if you went to college, and you know, if you went on to higher education in terms of like a master's degree or even a PhD, then certainly you have a much deeper knowledge and familiarity with history if you took history as a master's degree or as even as a PhD. But if you went to high school, or, you know, grammar school and high school, and even into college. College was a little more in depth, but you know, if the last kind of bits of history that you learned was from grammar school or high school, I just hope that you will go and look back at some of these Ken Burns documentaries, because you know, when we were in grammar school and high school, they taught us such a wide, broad view of most historical events, such a wide brushstroke. Yes, there were some details about certain events that they dug in to some extent a little deeper than others. But if you remember, most of the things were, remember these dates, remember these people, remember these events. But we never, and we were given some detail, but not an overall, as I said before, context. What was happening in the world? What were the leading ideologies of the world? What was human behavior like? What were people doing? What were the common beliefs? Who were the big leaders of the time? What were some of the events that led to some of these historic events that happened? And a lot of times we were never given that. Oh, you know, you have to know 1776, and you have to know Thomas Jefferson and George Washington and Abraham Lincoln and Benjamin Franklin and World War II, you know, okay, 1939 to 1945. But we didn't really always get an in-depth explanation. And providing the context so that these events actually made sense based on what was happening in the world at the time. What kicked off the series of events that led to them? Understanding the context of history is just as important, and I would argue, if not more important, than all the dates and all the people and all the specific events of things. It's not the what's, it's the how's and the why's of history that are most important, not just the what's. I think in most elementary and high school, we're told the what's, but not the how's or the why's as much. And that's what I think these Ken Burns documentaries do. They provide the how's and the why's, the stories and the context behind those dates and those people and those events that we were forced to memorize and on tests that were, either multiple choice or true and false. So if you're a fan of history, and even if you're not, I really think you do yourself a huge, huge favor by checking out some of these Ken Burns one, and especially the American Revolution, in light of the fact that in July, and once 2026 happens, you're going to start, a couple of months here, you're going to start to hear more about the 250th anniversary of the United States. And it would be great if more people fully understood what went into the making of this country, the context of it. We know the general. We know the top line. We know the Cliff Notes version. We broke away from England. King George was a tyrant. we remember some things like the Boston Tea Party or the Boston, I almost said Boston Sea Party. People in Chicago area will know that. What a great seafood buffet that place was. Oh, Boston Sea Party. But anyway, great crab legs and clam chowder. But well, and popovers, but I digress. So, as usual. But no, you know, you've heard about the Boston Massacre or the Boston Tea Party, or, you know, Washington crossing the Delaware, or you've heard names like John Adams or Benedict Arnold. But do you really know anything about them? Thomas Paine, Patrick Henry, Benjamin Franklin, Thomas Jefferson. But do you know anything about them? Do you know who they were, what they were, why they were? I would have to say that in my education, and I've always been a fan of history, and I took history, you know, some extended history courses when I was in college. But I have to tell you, as much as I sort of poo-pooing some of the kind of, you know, grammar school and high school history classes that we may have had, I have to say that in terms of the history of memorable, of literally learning, of things that I learned and still keep with me today, I have to say that my honors history class, taught by Brother John Viatoris at St. Patrick's High School, was probably one of the most completely informative classes that I ever had in my entire educational career that went through 4 years of college. Even though I was a senior in high school, that class, he provided that context. He provided that depth more than any other teacher. In fact, several years ago, I even had him on the radio. I was talking, I don't know if there was, a, it was a, it was probably a couple of years ago. There must have been some, probably maybe in, I can't remember now, maybe it was in 2024 or something, but it must have been a historical milestone of Paul Revere's ride, because this is a perfect example. You know, I wanted to talk about Paul Revere's ride with more in depth than we got, and most people have. Oh, you know, Paul Revere got on that, on a horse, and, you know, oneth by land, tooth by sea, and he rode. And yes, you know, we know that, but we know that less from history and probably more because of the poem that Henry Wadsworth Longfellow wrote about the midnight ride of Paul Revere, which was historical to some extent, but it was still a work of art. It was a fictionalized version. And I had Brother John Viatoris on the radio to talk about the context of that, the facts of it, and also an interesting anecdote. Did you know that there was a second rider, R-I-D-E-R? Paul Revere was not the only guy to jump on a horse and run through the countryside and let the Minutemen know and let everybody know that the British were coming. In fact, there was another rider named William Dawes, forgotten in history. He wasn't immortalized by Henry Wadsworth Longfellow in a poem. He wasn't as prominent as a person as Paul Revere. Paul Revere is known for this midnight ride, but he was also a very well-known and prominent person in the colonies and a very rich person. And if you ever see, there is Revere, silverware by the Revere family. So he was a prominent guy. He's come to, you know, be known for his midnight ride. But William Dawes was also out there riding. Didn't get as far as Paul Revere, but he still set out. He was still doing a very brave thing. But, you know, history has a way of forgetting some people. And that's what's so great about these Ken Burns documentaries. They reveal and they shine a spotlight on some of these forgotten people that played very important roles in history. And they are scattered around this 12-hour, six-part documentary on the American Revolution. As I said, believe me, in the next several months leading up to July 4th, we're going to start to hear more and more about American history and the revolution, as well we should, especially given how divided we are as a country. I was lucky enough to be alive. I was a young kid, but I was still around when we celebrated the bicentennial, the 200th anniversary. And this country went crazy. Now, don't forget, this was 1976. It was very similar in many ways to right now. Not as divided, but certainly not united. This was the aftermath of Watergate, so there was a great distrust in the government overall, in the presidency. Don't forget, Watergate happened in 72, but Nixon resigned in 1974, so in August. So it was only a year and a half later that we were celebrating our 200th birthday. And at the time, the Vietnam War had just finally ended in 1975. It had been going on. So there was still the aftermath of Vietnam. There was still the aftermath of Watergate. Two issues that greatly divided the city, the country, certainly by political parties, just like today, Democrats and Republicans, as well as ideologically. And then we had high inflation. We had in 76, there was high inflation. There was just turmoil. The country was grasping to get its feet back on after, you know, the 60s and in the 70s, so much had happened between the Kennedy assassination. We still had the Cold War happening. We had our first president resign. In 1976, we were in the middle of a presidential election between Gerald Ford, who took over from President Nixon, and Jimmy Carter. So a lot of chaotic things going on, but certainly we didn't have social media. And so as chaotic and turbulent as things felt, they certainly didn't feel as completely chaotic as they do today and completely divided. And hopefully, somehow, in the next 7 to 9 months, we can really have a true celebration of this country. Because as much as people complain about this country, and as much as people have put it down, and there's so much turmoil about the current president and some of the different policies, and New York has January 1st will be swearing in a admitted democratic socialist. Here we are, America, the seat of a republic, a seat of democracy, and the biggest city in our country will be led by a self-avowed socialist. I mean, that's huge. In the 250th birthday. So I hope that we can come together. As much as the country was divided in 1976, when it came down to 4th of July of 1976, people were waving flags. People were wearing red, white, and blue. People were proud of the country. I'm not sure how long it lasted, how much that euphoria lasted. As I said, I was a young kid. I wasn't even a teenager yet. But I do remember for that day, people being proud. And I hope we can get to that point again. I have some serious questions right now and reservations of what our 250th birthday celebration is going to be like in July, in the next, 7, 8 months, 9 months. I fear that while we should be celebrating, as divided as we are, as controversial and chaotic as things may seem right now, as divided as things may seem, we still should be proud to be American. And we still should celebrate the birth of this country as a unified effort and experience for everybody. But I have a sense that that's not going to happen. Sadly, I think we're going to see a lot of flag burnings happening on July 4th, 2026, on the 250th birthday. I hope that doesn't happen. I hope for at least one day we can put aside our differences and celebrate our commonalities and celebrate our birthday. But I don't know. Things are so tense and so divided today. And that's why I think it's so important that this, the American Revolution documentary is something that I urge you to watch. Yeah, there's a lot of time investment there. 6 parts, 12 hours. I get it. But my gosh, we should really have more of a knowledge and full appreciation for what went into the founding and the fight for our freedom and our liberty and the creation of this country. Because as flawed as this country is, and there's no question it is, and it always has been, it's still one of the greatest experiments in human government and at least ideologies of expanding and liberating the human spirit. We don't always live up to the goals or the aspirations that were written in the Declaration of Independence or even in the Constitution. And we will never reach them because we are flawed. We are human. But we can always at least aspire to them and know that at least those were the founding blocks of which this country was founded on and based on. And in this Ken Burns documentary, what's so great about it, it shows how this initial rebellion turned into a fight for liberty and independence and also for expansion. It was more than just the 13 colonies that was up for grabs here. Yes, those were the 13 British colonies of which were settled. But there was an entire continent to the west that no one even had a idea of the expanse of it. Even maps didn't have a true sense of it at the time. In terms of the pure amount of land that North America and the eventual United States was out there, and countries around the world, the leading countries of the time, Britain and France and Spain and others, were looking at this new land here, this new world, and saying, how do we get a part of this? I know, once again, in today's world, we tend to, and I think inaccurately, we try to impose our sensibilities, our lessons learned on people from 200 years ago. And we punish them and we criticize them and we castigate them. And we do that because we don't know the context of which those people were living in. And so we judge them based on our view of the world, with our expanded knowledge of the last 250 years that those people could not have had. It was impossible. It is not fair to take people out of their time. I got news for you, folks. I've said this many times. When the history books write about the last 25 years that we've all been living in here, I got news for you. It's not going to be a pretty picture. And for those who will be around in the next 50 years or so, and when the history books are written about the beginning of the 21st century and the first 50 years or so of this century, people that were living right now will say, well, that's not fair. I mean, you know, how did we know? And we didn't know this at the time. Well, that's, if you can't use that excuse if you were criticizing and punishing people from 400 years ago or 200 years ago for not living up to your standards, because 50 or 60 or 80 years from now, people are going to think completely different than we do. And they're going to be looking down at us that we were ignorant and stupid and short-sighted. And we're doing that to people in the past, and that's not fair. And I guarantee you that the people of the future are going to do it to us. Because we could already see what's happening here. Context is such a key to history. In addition to the facts and the details, the hows and the whys are just as important, if not more, than the whats. And that's what you will get if you watch Ken Burns' The American Revolution. I mean, here, for example, what never occurred to me. I've watched all 12 hours of it, and that's why I wanted to share this with you. Because, as I said, I think over the next couple of months, it's going to certainly be rerun on PBS stations. And you may have some extra time with vacations and time away from work or things like that to actually invest and watch this. At the very least, record it and try to watch it at your leisure. But I really hope that people leading up to, especially between now and July 4th, will watch this to at least get a better understanding. It's not the be-all and end-all. It's only 12 hours. You know, 250, you know, history from 250 years ago in 12 hours. But it certainly, I think, will fill in a lot of gaps and give most people a better understanding of the American Revolution, what it was, why it was, how it was, and how it led to where we are today. And those are the types of things we need to appreciate when we start to think about celebrating our 250th birthday. We are woefully ignorant about our history. Yes, we know some of the facts and figures, as I said before, but we need to know so much more, and this documentary really does fill in some important blanks with some captivating anecdotes, not just talking about, as I said before, the people that you would expect, like Paul Revere or George Washington or Benjamin Franklin or John Adams or Thomas Jefferson, but we hear about the army, the United States Army, that was a ragtag amalgamation of Minutemen and trained soldiers that, and some people, they were enlisted and they couldn't wait to go home, and Washington was constantly worried about replenishing people. Were they going to have enough people? They were losing people, obviously getting killed in these battles, and they needed constant replenishing. We needed help from other countries, as did Britain. Did you know that the British employed, bought mercenary German soldiers to fight against the Americans? Did you know that the British recruited African Americans who were slaves in this station, who were slaves or even free blacks in the country to fight on the British side? Did you know that the British recruited the indigenous people, the Native Americans, to fight on the British side? I didn't know that. They fought on both sides, but the British actually recruited people to fight against the colonists. And one of the most intriguing aspects of this, which was never pointed out to me in history, but it was sitting there. It was hiding in public. At the end of the day, we think of the American Revolution, right? And it was this fight for rebellion and protest and liberty and freedom. But ultimately, at the heart of it, at the beginning of it, think about this. the American Revolution, we say, oh, there was the Revolutionary War, and then there was the Civil War, and then there was the World War and things like that. Well, I got news for you. And this is what I learned from this. Just one little thing, but one of the many things I've learned. It's had such an impact. I now look at the American Revolution in a completely new way from this one description, which makes complete sense. But it was never taught to me, was never mentioned to me. At the end of the day, at the beginning of the American Revolution, think about this. It wasn't the Civil War that we had, you know, the famous Civil War with the North versus the South. It really wasn't the first Civil War in our history. The first Civil War in our history was the American Revolution. Think about it. This was a Civil War between British citizens, British subjects, who were colonists. I mean, we hear, oh, the 13 colonies and the colonists. Do we have a full understanding of that? Before the Declaration of Independence, every person who lived in America, in the colonies, citizens of each colony, were British subjects. Now, I mean, granted, there were Native Americans here too, and there were people from other countries, but the majority of people who lived here came from Britain. They were British subjects. That was the whole catalyst for the rebellion. The British government was sending edicts, were sending mostly taxes to the British subjects without them having a say. And they said, hey, we're British subjects here. You're just imposing these taxes on us. We don't have any representation back at home in Parliament. If we lived in England, we would have representation. Why are we being penalized? Because we're across the Atlantic Ocean. We're still British subjects. They had a legitimate beef. When this ultimately became a war, a physical war, it started as a rebellion of British subjects against the British government. Now, granted, these British subjects were an ocean away, but they were still protesting and rebelling and warring against their own country. The beginnings of the American Revolution started as a British Civil War. British subjects against the British government. And that was an aspect or a context, just that little title, that little designation of a civil war. And it continues to blow my mind that I never heard that term used to describe the beginnings of the American Revolution. Because we always, here in America, it's always this big flag-waving thing and you're always seeing the stars and stripes. But at the beginning, what's turned into the American Revolution started as a British Civil War. It began as a protest, as a rebellion, and it led into a fight for independence. It started as a civil war within the colonies, but ultimately led to a war of expansion. Did you know that the American Revolutionary War in many areas was fought in Canada? Some of our worst defeats were in Canada. Makes sense. It's North America. There were no boundaries at the time like that. The colonies were just on the East Coast and a little inward. But all the rest of the country was just waiting to be claimed or discovered. as well as north as well. Yes, there were Canadian cities, Montreal, Ottawa, things like that, major cities. But my point is, we think, oh, it took place, you know, at Concord and Lexington. Benedict Arnold fought in Canada. The famous Benedict Arnold had a major loss, in fact, in Canada. In the words of Johnny Carson, I never knew that. So these are just some tidbits that all of a sudden you get all this new information and detail and stories and personalities and the key word, the C word, context for all of this. So we find out about in depth about the Continental Army and the Continental soldiers and the Minutemen, how most of them were untrained civilians. In many ways, they were teenagers. In many cases, they were reluctant soldiers. Much of the American army was reluctant. They were signed on to get some money, and when their hitch was up, they couldn't wait to go home. As I said, it was a kind of a ragtag army that Washington was constantly wondering if he'd have enough people to keep this war going. Don't forget, the Revolutionary War took 8 years. 8 years. Did you know that? Off the top of your head, did you know that? That it was from 1775 to 1783? You'll know that if you watch the American Revolution documentary by Ken Burns. 8 year war this was. We get crazy if a war lasts for 6 months today. 8 years. Started before the Declaration of Independence. It had its beginnings going back in terms of rebellion, going back to the 1750s, 20 years before. Almost. With things like the Boston Massacre and the Boston Tea Party and other kinds of rebellions that were brewing as the British government was using the colonies to increase their wealth, to increase their world power by expanding to a new world with land and revenues. Don't forget, new resources, tobacco, tea. Why do you think the 13 colonies, for the most part, are all on the coastline from the top of the country on the east to the bottom to Georgia? Boats, trade, revenue, taxes. And so we find out about, you know, the people behind all these things. We find out about the key political leaders, yes, and the military leaders and the generals and the battles and the different groups. As I said, we find out that slaves and African-American slaves and African-American free blacks were involved fighting on both sides. As I said, German mercenaries were brought in to fight on the German side. On the British side. Ultimately, we have the Spanish and French to thank. We needed their help toward the end. The British Army and Navy were among the biggest and best in the world. To think that these colonists, these untrained, undisciplined ragtag army could beat one of the biggest armies. That would be as if you said, some little country is going to go up against the United States with all of our firepower and war power and armies and navies and you name it. The odds were so far against us, and we needed help from the French and the Spanish, who were major countries and major world powers at that time. You know, as I said before, you find out that Canada played a role in this. You know, the Native Americans played a role. You had and this whole idea of this American Revolutionary War, it was not as if this was not like 100%. We were divided even at the beginning of our birth. Not every colonist wanted to break from England. The loyalists, if you will, were the people who were British citizens and did not want to break free. They wanted to remain part of the British Empire. And it wasn't any small number. So within the colonies, this was not something that was 100% like, oh, well, everybody just wants to have independence. No. There were many, many, many people in every colony who were loyal. In fact, they even signed a document called the Declaration of Dependence. How great is that? It's a real thing. Loyalists, if they will, people who did not want to start a new country. When the Continental Congress puts out the Declaration of Independence, first draft written by Thomas Jefferson, the British loyalists of great number put out a Declaration of Dependence. No, we don't want to break. We want to remain British subjects. We don't want to become Americans. So many interesting aspects to this. We find out that Benedict Arnold, everybody knows Benedict Arnold as a traitor. Yes. But we also find out he was one brave and one hell of a soldier. And you know, what was interesting in the making of this, I think it took like 6 years to put this documentary together. Don't forget, like many of the Ken Burns documentaries, if you've seen them in the past, like the Civil War or the baseball or jazz or prohibition or country music or things like that, you know, they're always spiced with great photos. Well, there's no photos from the Revolutionary War, from the American Revolution. So what Ken Burns had to rely on is a mix of paintings from the era, a mix of, in terms of information, first-person accounts from people's diaries that were found and left, soldiers, civilians, men, women. We find the role of the women highlighted here. Don't forget, when all the men went off to fight the war, the women suddenly had to raise the families. The women, most of the people in the colonies were farmers. The women had to take on the responsibility of not only raising the children, but tending to the farm, harvesting the crops, selling the crops, keeping the home family together. So the role of women is highlighted in this. There's so many aspects that we never were taught, that we were never even told to think about, which Ken Burns shines a light on. As I said, through firsthand accounts from diaries or newspapers that were written at the time, and documents, pamphlets. There was printing presses. There were that. We did have that. And that's where so much of the information comes from. Paintings of the day. And he also used so many, what's so popular these days and has been for many years, are these, these Revolutionary War reenactors. They went throughout the different states and they used these reenactors with all their official, kind of costumes that they wear of the time, the period costumes, to at least give a sense of the fighting in the war. We have no pictures. We have no real pictures. There's maps. There's paintings. There's reenactments. There's first-person accounts. And he had to put all that together, he and his team, to create this story. And I have to say, as I said, I just watched it with great interest, and I've learned so much on a first pass, and I'll tell you, I'm going to watch it again. I'm going to watch all 12 hours again. Now, yeah, okay, I'm a history buff, okay, but I think everybody does, you know, you owe it to yourself and your family, to sit down and maybe even watch this as a family. If you have young kids, or even if you have kids in your 20s or 30s, I guarantee you they don't know some of this stuff that happened. I had no idea. When you find out, you know, we heard about the famous, some of the famous battles, right? You hear about these, some of these names, you know, obviously Washington crossing the Delaware. Well, do you know why it was such a big deal? Because he went in the middle of the night, crossing the in the middle of the winter, when for the most part the British army basically, you know, because of the winters on the East Coast, and don't forget they didn't have the Doppler weather reports back in the 1770s. They had no idea what weather was coming. So when it looked like it's winter time, especially on the East Coast, basically the British government, the British Army, said, "Well, we're gonna stop this war until probably, you know, the spring again. We're gonna you know, take a break." So they were completely unprepared when Washington crossed the Delaware. When? Do you know when Washington? We've all seen the painting, right? Of Washington crossing the Delaware with that prominent proboscis, if you will, his nose there, that eagle-like nose, crossing the Delaware, that profile with the other guys on the boat with the flags. We know the famous painting of Washington crossing the Delaware. Once again, there were no photos. There were no pictures. Do you know what date that was on? Do you know why that was such an important and strategic and successful battle? Context. As I said, with the winter coming, the British basically said, "Well, we're going to take a couple of months off. You can't fight in the weather. You can't fight in the winter here. With the snow and the cold, you can't do it. So we'll probably pick up the, you know, Americans will pick up the, you know, or would-be Americans, wannabe Americans, we'll pick up this war, maybe in February or March, start, you know, springtime. We'll look at the leaves. They start growing back. Sun starts coming out. We'll pick up this war in a couple of months. What do you say?" You know what Washington said? No, we're not going to wait. We're going to do a surprise attack. On what day? Christmas Day, December 25th, 1776. That's when Washington crossed the Delaware. That's why it's so important. It was a complete surprise attack on Christmas, in the winter, in the cold, ice on the water of the Delaware River. Completely surprised, as I said before, these German Hessian mercenaries that were basically sold by the German government to the British government because the Redcoats were losing huge amounts of soldiers. They needed extra support. So they went to the German government and he gave them these Hessian fighters. And that's what was attacked near in New Jersey around Trenton. But that's why it was such a a well-known and historic battle because it was this surprise attack. It was so unlikely. They had three boats going out. Only one made it there anyway. Washington's is the only one that made it. On Christmas night, in the dead of winter, with a horrendous snowstorm and freezing cold. Did you know that? I didn't know all those details. I could tell you that, but I know them now. Yeah, Washington crossed the Delaware. That's all we know. Know that picture. Know he did it. But why? What was the context? Why was it so important? Why was it such a complete surprise attack? Because it was winter and the British army didn't expect anyone to be fighting in the snow. The difficulty to just get from when they landed there to get all the guns and the cannons to where they had to go over the snow. It's incredible. But those are details that we never heard about. Did you know that the city of Boston during the Revolutionary War was a British stronghold? They basically had Boston. One of Washington's worst defeats was the Battle of Long Island. What's so cool is they're fighting for New York City, which once again, the British took New York. I mean, Philadelphia was the biggest and prominent city at the time, but I mean, New York and Boston were British strongholds. They took those cities over. It's so interesting to see. We think about, you think about New York and the five boroughs, right? So you say, oh, yeah, well, you know, there's, Brooklyn and, you know, there's Staten Island. Oh, and there's, you know, then you know, in different neighborhoods, the Harlem neighborhood. I got news for you. In 1770s, those areas were still in New York. There was Staten Island. There was Brooklyn. They've been around that long. Did you know that? You would or you will if you watch this documentary. It just provides such a, as I said before, a wider scope of this entire war. And it really, I'll tell you what it really does, it really goes into depth into some of these battles and lets you know just how brutal and how bloody this war was. You know, once again, we don't have photos. And anything that's drawn in a painting, it's a work of art. We don't necessarily look at it like a photograph of something real. It's an interpretation of something real. And so it loses the power and the impact and the reality because it was drawn. The reason why the Civil War is made such an imprint on our collective minds, and because we look at it as such a brutal and bloody war, and this war of within our own country, of the North fight, of Americans fighting Americans. The reason why it has taken on such meaning is because we have photos. They're some of the first photos ever taken in some cases. They're rudimentary, but they're the first, they're early photos. We see the real carnage, the real devastation, the real horror, the real savageness of the Civil War. And we say it was American against American. The American Revolution was no different. In fact, it was probably even worse. It may have been even more violent. But we don't really think of it that way. But when you start to hear these stories, that are relayed in this documentary. First-person accounts of what they saw. The devastation, the carnage. How bodies were, they weren't just shot with bullets. They were stabbed with bayonets. They were beheaded with hatchets. They were exploded with cannonballs. There was just as much blood and just as much carnage, if not more, in the American Revolution than there was in the Civil War. But we look at the Civil War as this horrendous part of American history with all the blood and the carnage, as I said before, but the Civil War was just as bad. It's just that we don't have real photos. So they seem to take on a less real sense. You'll see some pictures of Civil War battles. You'll see dead bodies. You'll see people lying there. But it's different if it's drawn than it is in a picture. But what is interesting about this documentary is that they don't spare the gritty details of this. This was a bloody war. This was a savage war. This was not a genteel war. It was just as brutal, just as bloody, just as violent as any war we've ever had. And somehow we don't look at it that way. Oh, you know, we think of, oh, well, you know, they used to line up and just shoot at each other. No, that's not what you learn here. So as I said, there's so many layers and so many aspects of the war itself, the fighting of it, the unlikely victory by the Americans, the fact that the Americans lost many, many, many key battles, and as the war went on, the chances and the expectations of winning it seemed less and less. And that's what makes it such a historical thing, is it? Because with all the odds against it, the Americans ultimately, with help from the French and the Spanish, were able to overcome one of the biggest, most powerful armies in the world at the time. And this first act of rebellion and protest turned into a fight for freedom and liberty and expansion. It was more than just the East Coast. There was a whole continent that then could be claimed that we have today known as the United States of America. It's really the war is about expansion as much as it is about independence. And you learn that. You learn that this started as a British Civil War. You learn that there were internally different factions of loyalists and patriots, if you will. And how this ragtag army somehow beat this world power at the time. And how King George was reluctant at even at times, wasn't even taking this seriously, was more worried about other aspects. But this pesky war, it took on greater and greater and greater importance. And then he got mad. Because then it was like, okay, what's going on here? Enough of this. At first he thought this would be over in 10 minutes. But no, it wasn't. And so it became a grudge match. And then it became really in many ways, because Spain and France got involved, it actually became kind of a world war, if you think about it, in terms of the world powers at the time. So many layers, so many interesting parts. And as in every Ken Burns documentary, not only do we have you know, the visuals and the information, but then they're also told, it's always very well written. And then there's also, it's also well narrated and acted, if you will. Peter Coyote is an actor that you may have known from the 80s, especially 70s and 80s and 90s. But he's always been the main narrator for most of the Ken Burns documentaries going back to the Civil War, and he's back again. But there's some very famous names, tons and tons of people. But, I mean, people like Kenneth Branagh and Claire Danes and Jeff Daniels and Craig Ferguson and Paul Giamatti, who played John Adams with great acclaim in the John Adams miniseries. And, of course, he reads many of the John Adams accounts as John Adams. Tom Hanks, Mandy Patinkin, Meryl Streep, Liev Schreiber. So many great actors and actresses providing the voices and the narration for this, along with, as I said before, just some extensive research, some creative and compelling visual images and recreations to bring this war that was mostly undocumented visually to life. Because as I said many times on this podcast, we are a visual society. And so without the visuals there, like real photos, real video that we have from more recent historic events that he's done documentaries on, it was a very creative way, and you don't really miss them because of the way that they've weaved all of these paintings and maps and reenactments and historical first person interpretations and reflections, as well as historic documents. It tells the story in a compelling way, just like he does everything else. I'm not going to tell you too much because I want you to listen. I want you to watch it. But I hope I've at least piqued your interest to invest the 12 hours in the six-part series of The American Revolution on PBS by Ken Burns. I'm sure it's going to be on many, many times over the next couple of months of, you know, between December and January, in the next month and a half or so. And certainly it will be replayed throughout the first part of next year, 2026. And certainly I'm sure it's going to be played in July, in June, leading up to, of course, July 4th, 2026, which will be our 250th anniversary. I know sometimes in today's world, we're questioning what it is to be an American. But we've got a chance to remember now. We've got a chance to learn. And we've got a chance to remember. This documentary by Ken Burns of the American Revolution gives us a chance to learn. And our 250th birthday on July 4th next year gives us a chance to celebrate and remember and aspire. I hope you'll take some time to realize how fortunate we are to have either been born here or to live here, because it really is a total lottery. It's a total luck of the draw. And as much as we complain about the current situations in many ways, we need to know about the past so we know where we're going in the future. And our past starts in about 1754, with the first rumblings of what will eventually become the American Revolution and the birth of America. I hope you take some time and fill in some of the history that you may have forgotten or you may not have learned. There's some really cool stuff. Wave that flag. And so ends another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNRadio.com or wherever you go to find your favorite podcast. We are there. And don't forget to tell your friends, tell your family, tell anyone who listens to a podcast that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and it should be theirs too. Your loyalty and devotion are much appreciated. Hope you enjoyed episode number 497. I'm Jim Tirano. I ain't here on business. I'm only here for fun. You've been listening to Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, from the end of my mind to your ears.